I went for a walk this morning with my dogs. And apparently this time of year, when you walk outside, your head just explodes and starts sneezing and coughing and all that type of stuff. So if I sound differently, I don't know, I sound weird to me, but it may all just be in my head. So if I sound bad, blame Mother Nature.
I think you sound actually pretty good. You sound good. I think I understand what you mean. Your voice is just a little thick, but it doesn't makes it better, yeah. I think.
Oh, okay. Cool. Well, it's that time of year where, you know, everything's blooming. So it's gorgeous outside. It looks great. Yeah. I saw three foxes this morning on my walk with the dogs. Ooh,
that's good luck.
Yeah, is it?
Mm-hmm.
I guess. Oh, wow. I didn't know that was a thing. I saw three foxes last night. All the fireflies were out for the first, maybe not the first time, but
most
I'd seen yet. Yeah.
I don't have fireflies yet.
There were so many last night. And my dogs don't understand them, which makes sense. And so we go out, you know, for the end of the night, it's all dark. Everybody's asleep. Neighborhood's quiet. We go outside and then the dogs are like looking around like we're being attacked by lights everywhere and they just get crazy. So they're going to have to get used to that. Anyway, that's what springtime's doing to me. How are you guys?
I'm good. I'm enjoying the spring. I'm working in my big shop right now. I moved my temporary office down here because I don't know if anybody's noticed Taylor started the new Instagram, 1790 Farmhouse. Taylor is hard fast restoring the front three rooms. So when you come in, my house is what you call a center hall colonial. So you go in and the middle, there's a center hallway, left and right, there's a parlor. And one of those parlors was my room that you guys get to see for the last 4 years, completely full of junk. I used to do this. We used to do this podcast from my kitchen table in the city. All three of us at my kitchen table in New York for years with my refrigerator in my background and the cats on the refrigerator.
The commute was awful.
Yeah. It was like 8 feet away from my bed. And then for years, I had that one side parlor in my house that was basically left and right living room, and it was just completely full of junk. And we always knew we wanted to redo that room. That room became, when we Airbnb'd the house, that room was the room that everything went in, including a lot of my personal belongings. So I just screwed the door shut so nobody would play with that stuff when we Airbnb'd, and then it slowly became my room when I came up here full time. So that was my office full of just junk. And in the last 3 days, Taylor and a little bit of me, mostly her, cleaned it all out, boxed everything up, categorized it, you know, tons of fan art, tons of fan letters and stickers and all kinds of stuff and hard drives, and we categorized it. And so now I'm relegated to the big giant barn as my new temporary office, and I really like it out here. There's a little bit of a separation. It's like every time I walk up to the house, I think to myself, what, I guess I'm just going to only have my phone. It's like the only thing I keep thinking about is I'm like walking like 500 feet from the barn to the house. I'm like, so I guess I don't need my laptop. I got my iPad if I need it. It's like the conversation I've been having every night walking back and forth. But the fact that it's spring and the fact that I'm in here, right now the doors are closed for wind for you guys, but both sides of the barn doors are wide open. It's beautiful. The other day it poured rain out. The doors are open and it was raining and it was really... It's really nice. And I got my new boat build set up, which I'm really excited about. Today, after we get off, I'm going to mill up a lot of the deck boards to get a lot of the wood started. It's so nice. And you forget, like, just a few months ago, it was 20 degrees out and you couldn't breathe. Hmm. It was so cold.
It sounds like you dialed in the perfect plate reverb plug-in just for the podcast. It's very subtle. And it's nice.
Oh, you mean my voice?
Yeah.
Oh. It's like just a little bit of reverb because you're in a giant room. So it's
oh, is that
ring.
What it is? Oh, okay. Yeah. I can't hear myself.
A little bit of ring.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Hello? Oh!
His camera shut off, so I couldn't see what he's doing. But it sounded fun.
Uh-oh!
We should all have a different plug-in on our voice. So, like, David, you take a flanger. I'll take distortion, and we can just have the worst podcast. In the-
Can you hear me?
That's great.
I got to listen to that later to find out what that sounded like.
It sounds amazing.
To him, it just sounds like he's just yelling.
Right.
No, so it's really nice being in here. And, you know, after 5 years of me building this place, I really finally feel, and you know, the TV show was a hectic nightmare last year, this time. And then once the show went away, it was almost like, don't preserve everything in case we need to do pickup shots. So that was like a few months, just preserve everything. Don't change anything around too much. And then slowly over the year, we got the new welding table. And I was like, you know what? We don't need this tool anymore. Let me put that over there. We don't need this. Oh, you know what? Let me bring this tool in. So in the last few months, it's kind of settled into what is what it is. And it's great. And I'm not concerned about doing the TV show again. So it's like, whatever, I'm going to do what I want. And if I'm able to actually save any money, I'm going to put the second floor in, or at least begin to do that. But we're working on the new barn first.
Is the plan for the second floor the same as it has been?
Yeah. We're going to rearrange the lighting. Patrick always made the lights so that we could move half of them underneath the mezzanine once we build it. But it's probably not going to happen until this time next year. Just financially, I'm spending too much money, so I just have to slow down.
You know, you could sell some of your cars.
That would not help. I only buy cars that aren't worth any money.
Wait, what am I going to do with $500?
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, I could buy one open web joist if I sell two cars. I need about 85 of them.
Yeah, fair enough.
No, I don't know. I mean, I've been contemplating selling the hearse only because when I buy these antique things, I feel like I am the current steward of these objects. And I feel sometimes that I'm not the right person for them. So regardless of like if it's cool or if it's something I really desire, sometimes I'm like out of more respect for the object. I'm like, okay, you find a better home, little buddy. I'm not the one for you. So that's kind of the vibe I'm feeling about the Cadillac at the moment. Only because now I'd rather have the floor space in my shop than the car sitting in the way. But I don't know. I am definitely on a car diet and a stuff diet.
You know, I have a fair amount of musical equipment, and I have not really played any music. I play piano every day, but we have a piano in our living room. And I haven't really played music in a really long time. And I always kind of look at, I have six guitars over there. And I always look at them and go like, you know, somebody else who really likes guitars could be playing those. And I think about just that they're sitting here and not getting used. Somebody else would enjoy them. They're not really in the way. So, I mean, it's not like I'm, you know, dying for that, you know, 3 square feet. But years ago, I used to trade musical equipment a lot. Like, so I was talking about being a steward of something. I would I'd buy something, I'd play with it for a while, I would use it really well, and then I would sell it off and then take that money and buy something else. And I was always moving through instruments and pedals and all that stuff. And I can't remember what it was, but at one point when we first got married, I sold something to get something else and I regretted it immediately. And it was like I should not have let that one go.
That's what happens when the hoarding begins.
Well, but I mean, it was only within
that moment.
Music instruments. You know, it's not like I don't really. Yeah, that was the case. And
Bob, let me just cut you off a second. Remember that story, because in about 5 years on Hoarders, you're going to be crying at the back of a truck and you're going to tell that story. That's going to be the moment.
My truckload of guitars going.
Yeah. I always regretted selling that wah wah pedal.
But like, so at the time, we were like young, like freshly married, didn't have a lot of money. So it made sense that I was selling things off. But then as we got, you know, more comfortable and saved some money and stuff, I remember Jenny saying, you know, you always regret selling whatever that thing was. I don't even remember it now, so I didn't regret it that much. But she was like, don't sell any more equipment. I was playing a lot at the time. She was like, just postpone getting the thing that you want until you can save up money for it and add it to your collection of instruments so that you don't have to get rid of stuff. And I remember her saying that, being supportive and being nice. And then from that point, I have not gotten rid of any musical equipment. The problem is that I don't take advantage of it. I don't play it, even though I want to. I just don't make time for it and everything. So in my office here, I've got those guitars. I've got two fantastic amps. I have a 1970 88-key Rhodes piano, all original, in fantastic shape. And I don't touch any of them. And it's that same kind of thing where it's like, I feel like I should pass this on to somebody else, but I cannot imagine how I would feel if I let that Rhodes go, you know?
Give it to your kids. I grew up listening to my dad and my uncles talk about all the cars that they had and that they wish they still had. That was the conversation anytime we were at grandpa's, was the cars that they had and that they wish they still had. And so I've anything of value as far as like music equipment goes, I've just hung on to, because I always think about those conversations at grandpa's. And I also have too much. I do use some of it, but we are losing our music room here in a few weeks for the bedroom renovation. So I have some very tough decisions to make.
Mm. Like, you mean the tough decision of where to build the other music room?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Got it. Yeah, I could see that would be difficult.
Got to run that by Kelly real quick.
We don't really need a kitchen, right? We could just like put all the stuff in the kitchen. Yeah, I mean, and maybe not to get morbid, but like thinking ahead about, you know, all of the things that I have, like our families are going to have to deal with all of the things that we don't want to get rid of. Yeah. So, you know, I try not to hoard things or have just a huge amount of stuff. But actually, I was thinking about this with tools the other day. I was thinking about how we now have my shop at my house. I have the farm, little tiny shop, and then the building. And there are a few tools, not many tools, but there are a few tools that we have to have in all three places just so that, you know, you have a basic set of, you know, a circular saw and a, you know, a drill and driver and everything. And I own like 8 pairs of drills and drivers now just between the places. And it's so weird. And granted, anybody could take those and use them and then go to Goodwill or whatever. But when you start to think about like a quantity, I have this many of this thing, like somebody eventually is going to have to deal with 8 of those tools plus all of the other stuff that I like right now that I'm accumulating and, you know, all of that. So
this guy really likes Star Wars.
Yeah, for real. And I mean, I think we've talked about this before, but my kids are going to have to figure out how to deal with R2-D2. Like, I'm going to have to put that in my will, which I haven't done yet, but I need to. Like somebody has to get R2-D2, or it's just going to go to Goodwill, and I know that they won't let it go to Goodwill. So
that's hilarious.
Anyway, I don't know how we got to that. But, David, what have you been working on?
I just finished up an outdoor garden bench. It's like inspired by the iconic George Nelson Herman Miller bench that you've probably seen everywhere outside of libraries and buildings and stuff. And I'm not the first one to do this on YouTube, but we needed a bench, and I thought I'd challenge myself and try to make it out of 2x4s. So it came out really good. It does not look like a 2x4 bench. And that just came out this morning, and I think it's gonna do all right. And then the engine build that I put out a week or so ago, that's got like, we're getting close to like 700,000 views. It's just gone crazy. And that's over on my second channel, and it had a slow start, and just like I knew it would, because there's not many subscribers over there, and it just slowly started to build momentum, and I just got all of these views just came at once, and there's like 2 things in the video that I wish I either would have talked about or did not do, because now that is all the comments of like, this guy doesn't know what he's doing because he was grinding on the block above the bearings, and now the bearings are full of shavings. Of course, I cleaned it out, and of course I should not have done that, but it turned out just fine. And then there's one thing I didn't explain fully about grinding on the crankshaft. So there's all these like, your crankshaft's going to be out of balance now. And overall, like really good comments, but there's a couple things that I should have explained or not done. And that seems to be the majority.
With that video blowing up, are you getting subscribers? I'm just wondering how YouTube works these days, even though I work there. I have no idea.
I think it added, I think it added like 1,800 subscribers to that channel, which I don't really care about because I don't post on that channel very often. And it's just kind of where I post non-woodworking things. My brother was asking me, why didn't you put it on your regular channel? And I was like, well, because they would probably bring in subscribers that wouldn't like the other content. And then that sends the wrong signals to YouTube. So,
I spoke to my channel guys a couple days ago, and they basically said no. They said YouTube doesn't seem to care about subscribers anymore. They're not really pushing that,
seems to be
promotional
the
algorithm to like ask for subscribing. Well, obviously, we all do, but they're not promoting clicking subscribe as much as they used to. I don't know. I mean, it's nothing visibly has seemed to have changed from my observation, but.
Yeah, they told me at this point it's basically just a vanity number.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You're better off, instead of asking viewers to subscribe, you're better off to say, go watch this video next, because that's what YouTube really cares about. And that's where you're going to get a lot of the gains from. So just have like a video queued up and don't give them 15 call to actions at the end of the video. Just give them one. Go watch this video next.
Tim Schmoyer did a good video about that exact thing last week. And I won't summarize it because it's not very long. It's like a 10-minute video. But over on Video Creators is the name of his channel. I'll try to find a link to it, put it down there. But it's worth just a watch because it helps you separate the types of videos that you could be doing rather than trying, like you said, to put too many calls of action into one place. So it's a good one. Cool. So is the success of that video like – I mean, obviously, success of any video is gratifying, but of it being a go-kart engine non-traditional thing for you, is that gratifying to you? Like, does that...
Extremely. So, because I talked about doing this video for 2 years, and I ended up not doing it last year because I just didn't have the time. And now there's a part of me, because I've been wanting to do that video for so long, there's a part of me that's like, I accomplished that. I did it. I think I did a really good job. There's a lot of people saying I did a good job. And I feel like that part of my life now is over with. I got over that hump. You know, I don't have to worry about that video that I wanted to do for 2 years. And you know, I think there's really, really good value in there. And it's kind of funny now that I've done that, that motor got a win. My first race of the season, we had 44 carts show up for the first race. I won, and I feel like, oh, that's good enough. I can move on. I could sell my cart tomorrow, and I think I could sell everything and just move on to the next thing. It's so weird that I feel this sense of accomplishment. Yeah, what else is there? What's next? Hit me.
Huh. It's an indie open wheel racing.
So I'm actually
start racing F1.
Yeah. That's it. So I mean, I'm not selling the cart, but I am going to try to sell the trailer. I actually missed last week's race because I had a work deadline that I actually forgot about. And so I stayed home to film a video. And I didn't feel that bad. I was bummed that I didn't go. And I was bummed that I was first in the points, and I wanted to go to maintain that. But at the end of the day, I was like, it's okay. It's okay. I got to make a video, and I really, really, really love making videos. So I think I'm selling the trailer, but I'm not going to sell the cart. That way, I'm just downsizing. So when I pass away, there's not so much stuff to go through. So I can be picky about what kart races I go to. I'm not done. But I'm okay if I miss a race or two. And all because of that video.
That's pretty wild. That's not really that's not what I was expecting you to say.
That's not what I was expecting to talk about.
Huh. Okay.
We all like learning new things, right? That's one of the things. And it's not like... I'm still not the best out there, you know, like there's a lot of luck that that's involved in winning a race, but I do feel like I learned a lot about engine building over the last couple of years, and I condensed everything down into one video, and I'm ready to learn the next thing. You know, I'm not the best out there, and I'm not going to be, because there's people who have been doing it for years, but I feel like good enough where I feel satisfied and I'm ready to learn the next thing, which could be auto body work. Who knows?
That's cool.
Yeah.
Painting, fancy painting.
Fancy painting. Maybe when I get older.
Cool. Well, let's see. For me this week, before we started recording, I was actually watching the first draft or maybe a draft of the video that's coming out tomorrow. So I think it's good, but I'm not done with it yet. I only made it about halfway through. But we're doing something different this week. So I think I've talked about it on here. Megan joined our team. Gosh, it's been 2 months, 2.5 months ago now.
I like to break stuff.
Yeah. She came on to run our marketing, and she's been acting as a producer when we're making videos. She helps us with pre-production and making sure we're getting everything we need to get and stuff. And it's been really awesome having her around. She doesn't have a whole lot of experience making things, but she had a table that she wanted for her house to go behind their couch, like in an L shape. And so she brought this idea up, and we turned it into a video to where we were going to go to her house, make a really simple table. And she was under the impression that she was going to help me make it. And so when we got there, I made her make the whole thing. So she, you know, she got to learn how to use all the tools and stuff. And I was there to help her. That's the way we were kind of going about it. And so the video is about her using all these tools for the first time and making a thing that she wanted to have in her house. And so far, I think it's really good. I think it's hopefully going to be helpful to people and empowering to people to, you know, if they haven't taken that first step to do it. And she doesn't have a shop, so we're working in her backyard across like her deck. And it's using just a couple of tools. So trying something different with that this week. excuse me. So that's what we're doing. And then I'm out working on working at the farm on something for next week. Actually working outside right now, which is pretty nice. Like it's good weather to be working in the shade. Working in the sun, it'd still be pretty hot, but to be working in the shade is pretty awesome.
I'm building, I didn't mention, but I'm building, I could show you guys this. It's funny, I'll tell a little funny story. See, can you tell what I'm making here?
It looks like a stick.
It's a stick. It is a stick right now. But it is the back leg of a chair. So this is going to be a traditional style, kind of like, just like a dining chair. Simple dining chair. I want to make 8 of them, but I'm making one to begin with, so I'm not overwhelmed. And I could also then figure out what's the best way to join the rest of them. So I'm going to do one as a prototype with a leather seat and a leather back. So it's like a traditional style chair with stretchers and rails and stuff made out of oak. But I'm going to say the funny thing is that yesterday Monday morning I planned on going to, well, I go to a place called Ghent. That's the town it's in, Ghent, Ghent Woodworking, Ghent Wood Supply. And they have any kind of wood you need in any shape, size. They'll mill whatever you want. In fact, our barn, which is just out that window that we're having the roof put on right now, we had tongue and groove pine. So when you look up inside the rafters, you see tongue and groove pine. And then on top of that is the roof and the insulation. We had Ghent make all that for us. They custom cut all that for us. Anyway, they're a provider of everything. And I just go there and pay the register, so I don't know anybody there. Every time I go there, I meet somebody completely new. So this isn't a promotion for them, although it's starting to sound like it. anyway, I didn't get a chance to go there to get wood, and I was like, wow, I'm just trying to think of the rest of the week. I won't have time to go and get the chair for my wood. I wanted to get like 8-quarter oak. And so reluctantly, I said, I know there's nothing in the container. Let me go look in the container. And sure as there was a giant chunk of oak in the container that I always thought was a different species of wood because it was very dirty. And I pulled it out and dusted it off, and I'm like, that's exactly what I would have just driven 35 miles in one direction to go by. And so sometimes the answer is right in front of you. Mm-hmm. That's my long story for that. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited that I didn't have to go anywhere and give me more time in the shop. And so I'm experimenting with joinery, and it's going to be good. I'm excited. And like I said, the seat itself is going to be the thick hide leather. And it's a chair. I'm basically knocking off a chair I saw in an antique shop. The one that I saw in the antique shop was probably from the teens, really old and weathered. And the oak was aged and beat up. And I was like, wow, if I had 8 of those, that would be so nice. So I'm not really embellishing on it other than just I don't have the chair at my disposal. So I'm just going based on a photograph. So I'm just kind of trying to create the look and feel of that antique chair that I saw. And it's just very traditional. There's nothing really outlandish about the way it was made. So I'm trying to do that. I looked up some notes on Google and You know what? I can't stand every single time you find the exact thing you need, it brings you to Pinterest, and then it says to click on this picture, sign into Pinterest.
Yep.
And I have a Pinterest account, but I have no idea what my password is. It was never saved into the OS. So
it's probably 1234. I'm guessing.
Yeah. 1234567. QWERTY. Two.
Unrelated to that, you're talking about that reminded me of something I heard of yesterday. I don't know anything about this, but a guy I know in town, we were talking, and he was saying that he just got a chip drop. Have you guys ever heard of chip drop?
You mean like wood chips? Because we get that every spring.
Yes. This is like, okay, so I just looked it up, and basically it's a free service where you can request wood chips to be dropped off at your house. And so they, arborists and people who take down trees the correct way, have to mulch it, and they don't have anything to do with it if the local place, you know, the local city won't take it or whatever. So you can sign up to have these things dropped off. So he signed up for this because he's building out these huge garden beds and he wanted, you know, wood chips. So a couple days ago, they showed up when he wasn't expecting it with two truckloads full of wood chips and two truckloads full of logs. And this was all from one tree that they took down, a cherry tree that he said was probably 6 feet around. He was like, it had to have been just gigantic. And the chips were, you know, like you would expect wood chips to go in like a smoker or something. So he's going to use it for that. He's going to put it in his garden and his compost and all that type of stuff. But then the logs that came with it were 5 or 6 feet long, about 10 or 12 feet around. It's a 10 or 12 inches around. So not super long, but good pieces of wood. And then there were a bunch of pieces from the trunk that he said were, they had split it into quarters, so they weren't big cookies, you know, but they were, each section was 2 feet in both directions, about 3 feet long, big enough that he couldn't move them by himself. And this was all free. They just showed up and dropped it off. Now, well, when we get you can't request what you want or anything, but, you know, for somebody who's like looking for wood that has to be dried and has to be managed and everything, but if you need like big pieces to turn with, like, who knows what you would get if you signed up for that? So
that's pretty interesting because up here, so I'm right across the street from, I always joke about it, the Milk Run. It's a place, but it's attached to a giant piece of property that there's all types of, the guy that owns the property has all types of industrial equipment. And so at the very back of the parking lot, which is hundreds of feet away from the store, there's 18 wheelers and all types. And apparently everybody in the immediate area who chips up trees, maybe like in the 10 mile radius, brings their truck and dumps it at the back of this big giant property. So there's, from time to time, the pile could be as big as an aircraft carrier of wood chips. It's tremendous. It's like 45, 60, 70 feet square and, you know, maybe 15 feet high. It's has been as big. Because a couple of years ago, there was a countywide effort to trim all the trees that are interfering with power lines. Because every time it gets windy up here, power lines break because there's so many trees. So there was it was like a 2 year long effort, and they just cut trees and chipped them onto that pile and dumped the chips over there. And so anytime we need chips, either I can go down there with the backhoe because it's just like about a 3/4 mile ride for me, or I can just request a local guy that would. Has better equipment than me and handles it more easily. He can literally load a truck and come up here and dump it. And we just got our dump of chips the other day. And then we'll throw them on the pathways and the different stuff that gets muddy up here. So it's something that we do every spring. And we just take it from that pile down there. So it's anybody that has the equipment to take away a pile can take away a pile. Or you can request somebody to do it. So I'm slightly familiar with that. But I didn't know that you could request it in a more suburban setting. I didn't know that's something you could do.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know much about it, but I'm just looking at the website here and there's a section for the arborists and a section for gardeners where you can kind of get some questions answered. And it looks like if you sign up for it, you can say whether you accept logs or not.
Right.
So, you know, if you only want chips versus chips and logs, you can actually mention that. I don't know. And it sounded like it's a free service, but he ended up, you know, kind of tipping these people just to cover some gas because it was like four truckloads of stuff that he got for free. But anyway,
we had cut down the trees in the front. I had logs that were 15 feet long. I mean, those logs weigh thousands and thousands of pounds. And I told the guys, just leave it all there. I'll figure out something. And then after looking at it for a couple of weeks, a local guy here, the guys that are actually doing the roof of my barn, they're very self-sufficient team of guys. And it's like this community, it's this religious community. And they basically do everything themselves. Plus, they're really good carpenters, which is why I use them all the time. And they said, what do you want to do with all these logs? Are you going to use them? Because we can use them. I was like, take them. So they took every single last log because they'll use them. And I said, I had hopes of like carving something out of it. He goes, well, if you want one back, he goes, they're just going to be on the property a few miles away where they work. I know where they are. He goes, they'll be there if you want them. He goes, I'll bring one back for you to carve up. I was like, okay, cool. Because I was going to maybe do a totem pole out of one of them, but who's got the time to make a totem pole? I got boats and cars to fix and build.
Yeah, but if you had a totem pole of the three of us on your property, like that would be
Eiffel
awesome.
Towers to make?
It would be.
I mean, I'm not going to help with it, but you should do that.
So I don't know. So,
but, you reminded me of the giant chip thing. When I was in Savannah, I don't remember the name of the hurricane, but a hurricane came through. And it didn't do a lot of damage to Savannah, but there were a lot of trees down all over town. And there was a National Guard armory kind of in the center of the city. And they had in front of it, you know, they usually have like a big field. And this one had a big field. It was right off a main road. And so they turned that field into a chipping station for all of the trees that were being picked up because they were picking up trees around town for months. Excuse me. And so they would bring these trees in, feed them into one end of this field, and they had, you know, all sorts of chippers and all sorts of machines down there to split them and break them up and everything, and then just spit out these chips. And there was a point after a couple of months of them doing this to where you couldn't see the building behind the chips. The guard armory, which is not a small building, but the chip pile was at least two, maybe three stories tall along the entire length of what was probably almost a football field worth of yard. And every once in a while, you would go by, like drive by at night, and you would see kids, you know, teenagers, like running up and down and climbing up these hills of chips and stuff and playing on it. But I'd never seen so much. I guess that's probably what you're talking about. There's just like a giant area of dumped chips, but it was the most I'd ever seen. Anyway, that's a service that I didn't know about. Maybe that'll be helpful to somebody along the way. Jimmy, are you still there? Did we lose you?
I'm here.
Okay. I couldn't see him, and
I see him
blinking and stuff. So.
I see him.
Is my camera going in and out?
Yeah, it's going in and out. Oh, there you are.
Because I could see you guys perfectly. I don't know why that would be.
We kind of had a topic. We had a couple.
We had a couple topics.
If anybody listened to last week's show and you remember the thing that we said we were going to talk about and didn't, send us a message because we're too lazy to go listen to it.
I wrote it down on my mouse pad. Chuck me right now. 1790s farmhouse dismantled my office completely, so blame it on her.
Well, the one we were talking about today, maybe talking about, is from our buddy Craig Bays, is a big supporter of the show. Thanks, Craig.
Thank you, Craig.
And he said a possible topic, your fans and your accessibility to their accessibility to you. Being on this podcast, it feels like we know you, and at what point do you have to draw the line, or do you? Now, this is interesting because at Maker Central recently, I had, I don't know, four or five people separately say, I feel like I know you, and I know you have no idea who I am. It seems like a weird place for you to be. Because they were trying to point out that, like, I understand this is probably awkward for you because you don't have any context of who I am, but I know all these stories about your life and all of these different experiences you've had and everything. And I think, excuse me, I think you could probably look at this topic not just from like a, I hate the word fan, so I hate to use that word, but from like a consumer, you know, person who consumes your content. You could look at it from that, but you could also look at it from the perspective of just anybody who does anything on social media. You are putting part of your life out there and anybody can see it probably. And so there is at least somebody out there who knows more about you than you know about them. And that is kind of a weird thing. But so I think no matter your situation, you could probably kind of identify with that part of it. I wanted to throw that out there so it's not just like, you know, YouTube people only or whatever. Anyway, how do you guys handle this? I know how Jimmy handles it, but I want to hear it from him anyway.
It reminds me of a funny story. I let everybody in. I look back at how my dad was when we were kids. My mom said my dad always needed to be, not always needed to be, but was always the center of the party because he invited, my mother said my dad had no boundaries. I remember as a kid waking up and there'd be like two guys sleeping on the couch of the house when I'm like 7, 8 years old because my dad went out with them all night long and said, you know what, don't drink and drive, come stay at our house. And, you know, without ever asking my mother if it was okay. And that was just one example, but my dad always had people at the house. And now I always do. Every time I talk to Andrew, he's like, Jimmy, who's at your house right now? Andrew Alexander, he's always like, Jimmy, tell me right now who's at your house. It's just like the weather report. He just wants to know what stranger is at my house. And last week, Alex, French guy cooking, came. He just says, hey, I'm in America. Chicago, come on by. And he hung out for 2 days. We had a great time. Taylor's mother happened to be here and he made us dinner. It was a really, really nice visit from him. But I've always been pretty open. And this is a funny story. I'm just remembering it while you're talking. And I don't want to say his name because I don't want to embarrass him. There's nothing embarrassing really about it, but I just don't want to say his name. So first year Maker Central, Derek says, you know, I'm trying to find a room for us, but the only thing that are available are suites. All the blocked rooms were taken, you know, all the blocked out rooms were taken. I was like, oh, just get a suite, whatever. You know, let's be a baller. I'll pay for it. So I paid for a suite. Now in America, a suite is a room, a kitchen, a couch, maybe, you know, one big room, maybe, you know, it's like an apartment. So I just assumed that the suite at the hotel in Birmingham was going to be a suite, like America suite. So we get there and it's just a tiny little room with two tiny little beds. I'm like, why do they call this a suite? This is just a regular room. And anyway, so I misunderstood what I paid for, which I didn't care about the money. But in the interim, I was speaking to a fan and he's like, I would love to go to Birmingham. I just have nowhere to stay. I don't know if I could afford it. I was like, well, I rented a suite. Come stay with me. I didn't even know the guy. I'd never met him. And I said, you can crash at our place. And so it was the night when me and Derek are getting over the shock of being in a room that's like just about 10% larger than a Buick. And this kid comes and we meet him and he's like, hey, I got nowhere to crash. I came all the way here. I'm going to stay in your room, right? I'm like, sure. I was like, there's no room in the room, but you could stay in the room. And he goes, cool. And I said, Derek looks at me like, rolls his eyes. He's like, you idiot. Just keep your mouth shut. And so that night we go to the room and it's time to go to bed. And me and Derek get on these little beds that are about as big as a coffin. And this gentleman goes, I go, sorry, dude, there's nowhere to, he just goes, it's okay, I'll just sleep here. And he just literally laid on the floor of the bedroom and went to bed and went to sleep. He just laid right on the floor, all of his clothes and everything. There was no room to like pull a curtain. There was nothing. He just like laid. So when I woke up at 7 a.m, he had already gone. But it was the funniest thing. Derek just looks at me and goes, will you stop being so like, he goes, just reel it in a little bit. I was like, I thought we were going to be in a suite, like a proper suite. So anyway, that's my story of, but you know, people always say, are you worried about somebody being inappropriate or anything? And honestly, I'm not, and I've never had to be worried about anybody. Everybody that I've ever talked to has been super respectful you know, you could always draw the boundaries and like, if you can talk, you could talk, you know. You don't necessarily have to answer every message, or you don't have to answer every message immediately. You know, if you can talk, you can talk. And then, you know, all of our time is spread fairly thin. But, you know, especially when there are fans that need special attention in the way that, you know, they're asking me specific advice about, I've always been open about my alcoholism and my sobriety. And, you know, I feel that for me personally, it is something that, I have a personal responsibility to inspire people that have problems with that. So anybody that ever wants to talk about that, I'm always willing and honest to share my experience and hopefully guide them in a positive direction. So I feel there are certain responsibilities I have as a so-called celebrity and, you know, somebody in the public view to help people in certain ways. But I, in my experience, everybody's been respectful. And honestly, in all this time, I don't have any crazy horror stories. I remember once, though, that Nick Offerman and I were pitching a television show And, you know, there was all these, it was every indication that it was going to happen. It was going to be a big deal. And I had just started making the ice picks, and I posted how to buy an ice pick from me. And it had something to do with like putting my address in public. And I posted my address, and Nick writes to me privately, and he goes, "You idiot." He goes, "You're about to have a hit TV show on Discovery Channel and you're giving out your address." And I jokingly said, I go, "It doesn't matter. No one cares." Anyway, it didn't matter and it didn't care. Nobody cared. And the show didn't happen. But yeah. I remember him scolding me, saying, "You know, you're making a mistake." He was doing it lovingly, but he was being firm about it. And it didn't matter. I told you guys when we started, I said, so often I go to give out my P.O. box, and then I think about how long that piece of mail will sit in my P.O. box before I get a chance to go get it. And I just give out my regular home address. I'm like, I just said that there. This way it'll come from the porch.
Yeah. You guys and I said, why don't you just leave it on his pillow? Because he's going to invite you over.
yeah, please leave it on my pillow. The left side of the bed is mine.
Well, David, you've got a different tact here.
So I'm the complete opposite. So I'm a really shy person. First of all, hello, Craig, who gave the question, and hello to Alicat, his daughter, who sends me nice messages. Anyway, I'm really shy. And when Jimmy was saying, you know, as these younger people could come in and out of the house as they wanted, we did not have that. Friends would come over, but they weren't allowed in the house. You know, we had a very kind of like rundown house. It was very messy. It was embarrassing. So we actually just friends just couldn't come into our house. And I don't know if that has anything to do with why I don't have people over now. Maybe, maybe not. But I'm super shy, and I get a lot of anxiety talking to strangers if I'm not ready for it. Like when we go to events, somehow I can mentally prepare and I'm like, okay, I'm going to talk to a bunch of people today. It's going to be fine. And at the end of the day, I'm usually like crazy exhausted, but it's fine. But if I run into, I ran into my friend Eric the other day. He was jogging. He lives in my neighborhood. And I stopped and said hello. And then we just had the most awkward conversation because I wasn't ready to have an actual conversation with a human being. And I tried to break up the awkwardness by telling a joke that just didn't land. And it just made it more awkward. And I was just like, okay, I got to go, and just drove off. But I think the videos allow me to be the social person I wish I was more comfortable with. So the guy, like, I'm me in the videos. That is me. But I might give the impression that, you know, I love hanging out with a bunch of people all the time and partying and being social. That is not. I enjoy spending time alone with the dogs and the wife. So when people want like my personal number, or they want to send something to my personal address, I'm very protective about that, and I'm not trying to be rude. It's just that stuff gives me a lot of anxiety, and I've gotten better with anxiety over the years, but it's still there, and I'm just trying to find ways to reduce the anxiety so I can enjoy the things that I want to enjoy. So complete opposite.
I think I'm probably somewhere in the middle. I think I enjoy solitude more than I enjoy not solitude. I don't know what you call that. So I enjoy being alone and would be perfectly fine emotionally to be kind of off by myself or with I enjoy small groups of close friends more than just like knowing everybody. Jenny has always been a lot more of a social person than I am, and she always, you know, always wants to take care of people. She's always around larger groups of people. She's more involved in things than I am.
Yeah, I got that impression from Jenny when we met over the years. She was very curious about me, and I could tell that she was really interested in the new people and meeting people.
Yeah, for sure. So it's a good balance, because if it were all her, we would just we would never be alone, and we would, you know, we would be involved like in everything. If it were me, we wouldn't do anything. So we're pretty good balance in that way. I apologize for my throat. I don't know what's going on. But I think over the years, I've opened up a little bit to be more social because of her. She's pushed me in that way. And then I think just this job has caused me to, you know, have to interact and had the opportunity to interact with more people. But I think as far as the people knowing us and stuff, I would caution, or not caution, but I hope everybody listening to all of the things that we do and seeing us online, I hope that they realize that they are not seeing all of us. You know, we do like give a lot of personal stories and stuff in podcasts, and we tell a lot of things that we like and don't like and things that we've done. But I know for myself, at least, and I'm sure for you, both of you, there's a lot of stuff about me, things that I actively do on a regular basis, things that I enjoy that will never, ever make it into a podcast. They will never be a topic of conversation with people that I don't know because they're personal. There's stuff that I want to be my life that's not the life that the rest of the world, not anything I'm ashamed of or anything, but there's just no reason for me to put all of my life into podcast or all of my life into YouTube, you know?
Yeah. I always ask myself, is it good for the bottom line of, you know, well, Big Lou, thank you, infotainment. I said, is this good for the bottom line of infotainment that I provide? And I say, nah, nobody cares that my brother's living with me for a while or, you know, whatever it might be. Occasionally my brother's been popping up in some videos because he's been living with me during the week. He's kind of slowly taken over for like the position that Aaron had. And, but you know, okay, my brother's kind of grumpy. He doesn't like being on camera. So if he ever lightened up and stopped being so grumpy, I'd put him on camera. But in general, there are, you know, like this, there's like a new business venture. I talked to you guys about it a little bit, but there's a lot more to it than whatever I've let out. And it's only because it just doesn't really, there's not enough to provide for infotainment. And then of course there are personal things, which just nobody should know about, but only because it's just boring. You know, yeah. It's just, you know, right? I'm not like Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. People need to know all these intimate details about me and Taylor. No one cares. You know, I really believe nobody cares because there's nothing, you know, severely entertaining infotainment about it.
So, I mean, there is a thing where a lot of people just crave information. They just, you know, whether it's interesting or not, they just want to know everything that there is to know about a certain topic or about a certain person. And so I think a lot of the, you know, there's a lot of stuff about our lives that I know my kids, for instance, like I try to keep them as far away from my social media presence and my business stuff. Not that I don't want them involved, not that I don't want them in the videos, but like they don't need to be accessible in any way whatsoever from anyone. And I think, you know, you were talking about not having any weird experiences with people or not being worried about, you know, interacting with people. I've only had a couple of weird experiences, but I think the caution around Jenny, who can take care of herself, but Jenny and the kids, that's a line where whether it's necessary or not, I'm a lot more cautious about what I let out in, you know, where that like public personal kind of thing is. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff there, and that's for their sake. That's not that's so that they can end up having, they can grow into adults and have lives that are not connected to or not downstream from what I do online. That's not fair to them. You know, they need to have their own lives and their own separation. There's already been a few things where, you know, people say things to them at school about me because they saw me online. And even that feels weird. Like, and not in a good way. Like, there's, you know, of course, there's always like, oh, your dad's on YouTube. That's really cool. But there's been some negative stuff to them. And I hate that for them. And so I want to keep them as far away from the effects of what I do as possible from a negative way. And so that's changed over time too, because I think, you know, when I first started, I was trying to make sure that people understood that like I'm a family person. I mean, I'm a father. The father stuff is important to me. It's important to what I do, what I make, why I make things, all of that stuff. But as they've grown up a little bit, rather than trying to hold on to that, like, I don't want to say persona, but that picture of who I am online, it's more fair to them to have their part separated out than for me to hold on to the, like, hey, look at me, I make things and I'm a dad. The dad thing's not anybody's business, you know? So that has evolved a little bit, which is kind of strange, because I know some people found, you know, you find community with people that have similar family types or similar interests or whatever. And so as I've tried to push my kids out of view a little bit over the years, I think that's probably not been what some people expected. But part of that is so that I can make a more clear understanding of what I want to be in the world and what I want to be in our house, you know. But anyway, all that to say, I just hope that people who listen to us and watch us realize that they know what we want them to know about us and what we put out there. And you may not know as much as you think about all of us.
Of course. There's something strange. Me and Taylor had this conversation the other day. She had a girlfriend that is no longer her girlfriend. But for a few years there, she was, she had a common interest with somebody. And so they developed a friendship. And at one point, the friend says to her, you know, Jimmy doesn't put enough pictures of you online. Like, what's wrong? Like, what's up with that? Does he really love you? Does he really care about you? You know, he's not proving, basically, she basically said, he's not proving to the world that you're in his life enough. And that among other reasons why they're not friends anymore, but that whole thing, and we talked about it the other day, and it's basically, Taylor's camera shy. She doesn't want it. Like, any picture I take of her, she's like, get rid of that picture. So we've established that any pictures that I take of us together is for us. It's for me and my family. And, you know, occasionally I share pictures with her that are cool. I bought a new camera. So the other night I took a whole bunch of cool pictures of her, including the ones that she decided to post on the 17 farmhouse thing, 1790 farmhouse. But I would never post a picture of her without her explicit approval. And also, if it didn't fall into the, unless we're feeling playful, or unless it had to do with the infotainment filter that I put on everything. Is this infotainment? Like the other day, I did the Get Sunday thing. Yesterday, I posted a thing at Get Sunday, and she right away said, I want to be involved. I was like, all right, great, fantastic. It's not just, you know, fat old man watering the lawn. It'll be a cute girl watering the lawn. It's like, you water the lawn, and I'll take some pictures of you. And then I got like a real moment with her going, wow, I really like this stuff. And like right there, I was like, oh man, that is like, that's all I needed from her right here. It's what she wanted to share. It's great. But it's funny. A lot of people, not a lot, but occasionally people say, how come you don't show Taylor more often? I was like, she doesn't want to be on camera. This isn't the life she chose. So I totally respect that. And I don't force her to be included in stuff unless she wants to be included. And out of nowhere, when we were in England, she's like, hey, I started a new Instagram. It's going to be me cleaning the house up. I'm like, all right, great. Me redoing the walls. And she's got a real affinity for turn of the century plaster walls and how it's done. And she's becoming friends with all these Instagrammers, like the Craftsman blog. And they talk all the time about the details about how to repair old plaster. And in my office, since she's going to be showing more pictures of this, there is a layer of modern sheetrock on top of the original plaster walls. So instead of patching the plaster holes that may have been made by it, we already pulled one piece off, and there was a heating pipe. So they removed the heating pipe. So there's one hole, and there's probably several more for some reason or another. They just put a skin of sheetrock over it. And the sheetrock was never even spackled. It's just a piece of sheetrock carefully put next to another piece of sheetrock, and that rolled over edge is just butted up to the next rolled over edge. So in my office that you guys have seen in the background, all those are just sheetrock just gingerly placed on the wall and nailed and painted. Nothing was ever. So it just pops right off. So she's going to be sharing more of that. So it's the friends and family in your life, you want to respect them. You don't want to show them simply because they're there. Only if they want to be involved. And, you know, when we were having fun in Europe a couple weeks ago, you know, me and Jocko and Derek and you were involved. You know, we like having fun and goofing off. And, you know, we videotaped more than we actually Instagrammed. And so if any of that stuff is fun when I filter through it, I'll post that. But, you know, there's lots of intimate moments that it just, you don't even think to put up because it doesn't fall into that infotainment thing. Unless you're being playful and it's, you know, pointed towards the infotainment we all do.
So I've noticed something about celebrity when I, you know, I think of, let's take Nick Offerman just because he's a known person here. Mm-hmm. You know, he has his own social channels and stuff, but I've often thought about these people that you know from TV or from movies or just people who are famous. And they post online, some people more than other, but imagine a person who only posts, you know, once every week or something. They're not super active. Like, that person has a life in between TV shows and in between posting online that you know nothing about. You shouldn't mm-hmm. know anything about it. I mean, there's mm-hmm. there's a reason for that. But it's weird in that our very social media focused jobs, there's a certain pressure, whether it's explicit or implicit, that you should show as much of your life as you, even in quantity and depth, as much as possible all the time to stay relevant. And so I think there's a lot of people who do what we do, whether it's making stuff or not, but just as far as like the media side of things, who just want to show everything. And maybe it's because they actually want to. Maybe it's because they feel like they have to stay relevant and to stay in people's minds and stuff. But a couple of years ago, more than a couple of years ago now, I had to decide, like, how far am I willing to do this? Like, how far am I willing to go to stay in people's mind? And at what point am I, like, just trying to get attention through posting rather than being proud of something that I did and showing evidence of that thing that I made, you know?
That's what I say. I always go through that infotainment filter. Yeah. Is this information and entertaining?
Yeah. So I think the reason I brought that up is because as people who maybe don't, anybody listening, even if you don't make YouTube videos, you're not on a regular content creation schedule or any of that type of stuff, if you post online, be wary of that pressure to just like stay relevant, you know, to post because you need to post rather than because you have something to say or something to show, because that plays a lot into how much access people have to you and how much they know about you, complete strangers. So anyway, David, you're going to say something?
Staying relevant is made me think of, I was thinking of Dave Grohl the other day. Like, I'm a huge fan of Dave Grohl, not so much the Foo Fighters, but just Dave Grohl as a person, because he's just so fun to watch in interviews. And he's, if you go back to bands of the 90s, most of them you don't hear about anymore. Or maybe they're still a band, maybe they're still playing, but they're not big like they were in the 90s. That's just how things work. But for some reason, Dave Grohl has always stayed relevant. And I don't think it's because he has posted every little thing about his personal life. It's because he has grown and been a part of all these other things outside of his own bands, like playing drums in other bands, doing all of these interviews. And it's just... He's just one of the rare exceptions from musicians of the 90s who are still super relevant and super in the minds of people today. And
plus he's made really good content. I mean,
say what you will about the
Foo Fighters, some of that music is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good point.
I don't know where I was going with that. It was just something I was thinking about the other day. Like, how does he stay relevant?
He stays relevant doing good work, not by showing off him, you know, his self all the time just to be in front of
him. He doesn't take pictures of his dinner a lot.
I mean, he doesn't post them anyway. You never know.
But it was funny you brought up Dave Grohl because I've been on a Foo Fighters bender. I've been listening to Wasting Light, the album, a lot, and thinking about, you know, how the tragedy that they lost Taylor Hawkins and just like what those guys must be going through and trying to figure out how to make the next move. I remember in 1980 when, you know, we're getting off of this is a different topic, but I remember in 1980 mm-hmm. when John Bonham died. And I remember them making that announcement that was the end of the band, because without John Bonham, they don't think they could make the same music. It's like, you know, a piece of the system died and the system has to just stop. And, you know, it would be tragic if those guys did the same thing. I can't imagine that they would, or at least maybe not go on in the same exact capacity, which they couldn't. But, you know, I'm excited to see where they go from here. You know, tragedy equals, you know, growth.
I mean, so. And Dave Grohl is, you know, he's had some tragedy in his life. I mean, yeah. Good grief, you know, to be in two of the most popular rock bands in the history of rock bands and to lose a really important member of both of those bands.
Yeah.
Good grief. Anyway, you got anything else on this whole, like, people knowing us or not knowing us or where to draw a line?
I just want to emphasize the point that hopefully I don't come off as rude. I don't mean to come off as rude if I don't interact with every single thing or reveal all the personal things. And then, that's all I have to say about that. And then when we were talking about the engine stuff, I'm going to move on and do the next thing. I want to make it clear that it was just my own personal hurdle that I was trying to get over, and not a bragging thing. Like I did that. I'm awesome. Now move on to the next thing. I just like learning new things. And
you have every right to brag, Dave. And I mean,
maybe I do.
it's okay.
Maybe my shy, because of my shyness, I'm worried about how I am presenting myself.
No, I think the fans that know and love you would want you to brag because it's a huge accomplishment, especially since if you go back to the beginning of the podcast, how, you know, you set, you and I and Bob, we all set goals for ourselves. In some cases, I remember one of the first episodes, I'm like, oh yeah, it would be really cool to learn how to laser cut. And like, that's so in the past. And, you know, like, I remember thinking, like, how am I ever going to get my hands on a laser unless I'm Dr. Evil? You know, now, like, I've had several different versions of that. And, you know, same thing with you. You said, I wanted to do these several things. And I remember you talking about getting into welding and stuff like that. Remember you got a welder and you didn't touch it for like a year and a half?
Yeah, probably longer than that, yeah.
And now here you are. It's like, psh, welding? Let me tell you something about welding.
Yeah, that's how I approach it.
But the idea is like, you know, and this goes back to infotainment and inspiring the people that watch us. And it's nice to be able to see other people grow because we're showing how we're growing. You know, so be proud of it.
Okay, we had some weird technical thing. My mic disappeared, and I just went into dad voice, and I was going to make a point before we ended. I was going to get serious for just a second and say that I think people are, you know, considerate of, like, social stuff, and most people are really smart about how to interact with people in the real life, in the real world. But I did want to point out to whoever the dude was who showed up at my front door with his two boys unannounced while I was in California, that's a bad idea. And you should never do that. Mm. Don't come to people's houses. Don't look up their houses, but don't come to their house unannounced. Like, it's just, everybody should understand that that's a bad idea. Because I was in California and I got a phone call from Jenny saying that so-and-so showed up at our house. Do you know this person? And I said, no. And she was like, well, I'm standing at the front door with him right now. And I said, shut that door. It made me really, really uncomfortable. And I think most people know not to do that, but I want to throw that out there. If that was you, not cool. If you've ever thought about doing that, don't do it. And I'm done.
What I was going to say is I think that's only happened to me a couple times, and it hasn't been bad. But most people, my shop is kind of on the public commercial road, so that happens all the time. I mean, more than half the visitors that stop by are people that want me to weld their lawnmower back together and don't know anything about me or what I do. You weld here? You make things? Either that or they think I'm a movie prop house because they heard that I'm in the movie somehow, but they don't understand it. So they're like, this junkyard can't possibly be presenting. This is a junkyard that's behind the scenes. Guy says, he goes, oh, I heard you're in the movie business. I was like, yeah, kind of. He goes, yeah, I know guys that are in the prop business. I was like, I'm not in the prop business. I said, I am the prop.
There is our title. That is beautiful.
But, you know, I think, I don't mean this to sound like I'm dissing you two guys, because I'm not, but I feel that you get back what you give out, you know, and you establish you establish, you know, your relationship by just doing and saying and setting examples. And yeah, that said, there's always going to be an anomaly or somebody that doesn't understand boundaries as well as other people. But Bob, I watched the video where you did the light shade, the light panel. And I was surprised that it seems like anybody would be able to know where that is.
You're surprised that people could know where it is?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I know you didn't explicitly show the front of the building, yeah. But based on showing the inside of the building, I just assumed that you would be more private. That's all.
Well,
I don't want to give away. I mean, people can go watch the video, but I'm just saying, I just assumed that you would have been a little bit more discreet about, you know, shooting the surroundings and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of went back and forth on that because we're not trying, we don't want traffic. We don't want people to show up at the office because there's nothing to see there. But at the same time, it's a commercial building.
Yeah, you on the commercial strip like
that. Yeah, it's not something that we can keep hidden.
Control too much.
But, you know, we also have cameras up and we know when people are approaching the building and we don't ever have to answer doors. And if you show up unannounced, we probably won't answer the door and stuff like that.
And that secret trap door underneath the welcome
mat. Yeah. I mean, yeah. The attack dogs that we keep around.
If you show up with the poison cheesecake.
Poison cheesecake.
Josh pulls the lever and you just get shot into the center of the earth.
So there used to be, this is totally unrelated. I'll save that story for the after show.
The welcome mat collapses.
Let's finish up. You guys got anything else on this before I thank our Patreon supporters?
I think we're good.
Cool.
I think we're good.
Big thanks to everybody that supports us on Patreon. This question came from Craig that we talked about today. And Craig is one of our Patreon supporters. And we are really grateful for him and all of the other people. Our top supporters over there are Full Steam Designs, Odin Leather Goods, Rich at Low End Designs, Blondie Hacks, Fun Kiss Artistic Creations, You Can Make This Too, Chad from Mancrafting, Works by Solo, Albers Woodworks, and Corey Ward. But like Craig, there's a whole other list of people who help us out, and we're really grateful. I want to say a big thanks to Crafty Man Forge, also one of our patrons. Everybody at every level over there gets the after show, which is another separate podcast and separate feed and everything. It's only for them. And it's usually, 15, 20 minutes of us talking about other stuff, secret stuff, all of that. So if you want to get that, or if you just want to help out what we do, we would really appreciate it. And go to patreon.com/makingit and see which level makes the most sense to you. And if you don't want to do that, that's okay. Glad you're listening. Hope it's at least fun, useful, entertaining. Infotaining.
Whatever.
So, yeah. Big thanks to them. All right. You guys got anything to recommend this week?
Yeah. I had something. Well, I'm looking at my thing. Andrew Klein always comes up with great inventions. Oh, yeah. So if you don't know Andrew Klein, go check out Andrew Klein. He just keeps hitting it out of the park. I mean, he just keeps coming up with really cool, novel, interesting inventions. So check him out. And then also right underneath that, I watched Johnny Builds. She asked me to build this, and I couldn't say no. He builds a desk for his daughter. It's from a few months back, but I got a chance to hang out with Johnny at Workbench Con, and he's a good dude. And another great example of someone whose life changed in a completely different direction because of YouTube and the stuff we do. Now he does it too. It's great. So check out Johnny Builds and Andrew Klein, two big parts of the maker community.
Yeah, they're both awesome.
My pick this week is, it's the second time I'm mentioning Van Nystat because his video.
His videos
keep getting better. They just seem even more genuine the more he puts out. So if you don't know, it's Casey Neistat's brother, and his videos are just phenomenal. He's a great storyteller, just like his brother, but has it.
He's also Casey's father too.
Yeah, technically, yes. Not technically, but
technically,
but what? by legal standards.
But legally, Casey ran away from home when he was young, and like the only way he could like get onto some next part of his life or get into college or something was to have a guardian, and so he was like emancipated from his mom and dad, and his brother adopted him to be able to move on to some legal loopholes. So it's a stupid technicality that he often talks about.
And then in Van's latest video, it's called How to Make a DIY Zine. And basically he makes a paper zine just by doing paper and wax layouts, like how things used to be done a long time ago. And it threw me down like this memory lane of making things in college, where you ran things through the, I forget what the machine's called, like the waxer and laying stuff out. And I was like, I forgot about that. That was, I didn't.
Was it on with you guys? Where I think it was with you guys, where I remember our teacher used to have us, I had a teacher who would design books, and she would invite us to her studio. Now, in retrospect, she was too lazy to leave and go to class. So she was like, hey, come on, just come to my place. And we were all more excited to be like in a real working studio in Soho. And she had a waxing thing. And I remember saying, like,
right.
And I'm just thinking some days my legs will be that smooth. That's what came to mind when you, I don't know.
No, you throw a piece of paper through this and it would like pull it through like a laminating machine.
I see.
But what it would do is put like a tacky wax on the back so you could reposition things on paste up boards. The client would be like, that's too close to that. Could you move that? And then you could like peel it up and move it over before it goes to photograph to become part of the artwork.
So in the video, he's making this zine that he is providing to his patrons over on Patreon. And then like I was reading through the comments and somebody was like, hey, if you don't know, a zine is a handmade magazine. And so then a bunch of people were like, oh, because it was so weird to me, like maybe some younger kids wouldn't know what a zine is, but I'm an old man and we used to do things by hand back in my day.
That's crazy. I never even thought about that. But yeah, that's like a whole lost
more and
thing.
More. I'm realizing that like when I hang out with my nieces and nephews that are like 18 and 20 and 21, when I hang out with them, I always have to be like, when me and my brothers have like shorthand conversations, like about anything, we have to like go, oh, okay. It's a bad example, but you know, I say like a skateboard is this like piece of wood with two wheels on it. You ride. Or
four wheels.
Telephones actually used to be like attached to the wall. You know, you used to have to like stand in your kitchen and talk on the phone, and then like say hello. Oh, this call is for somebody else. Here, this phone call is for you. You used to have to like share a phone number.
Yep.
You know? And be like, what? You used to share a phone number?
And like there were these things called like busy things. Signals. When you called and they were already on the phone. Yeah, anyway. Maybe in the after show we can talk about how old we all are.
There was a time when you used to like leave your house, like Joe Rogan does this bit. He'd be like, when you left your house and you were near a phone, he goes, you could be in outer space. That's it. You may never ever come back again. Yeah. Nobody had any idea where you were. Until you showed up again, nobody knew where you were or what you were doing. And that's just the way it was. And like I recently listened to a funny conversation between Jeff Fader and Andrew Alexander on Jeff Fader's podcast, the Full Blast podcast, and they were talking about power hammer companies from the 1880s, Little Giant Company specifically, and Jeff kind of rhetorically asks, how did they market? How did they market? And then the question basically said, how did anybody market anything?
Yeah.
You have to like write a letter and mail it to somebody? And then them open the letter, look at it, and then write back to you and say, thank you for sending me this advertisement. I think I do want to buy one of your 600-pound machines. Okay, let me write you a letter back and say it's this much money. Okay, let me put that in an envelope and send it back to you. And in 18 months from now, you might show up at your door on an ox-drawn carriage.
And then you're too...
It's a good,
how did it work?
That's a good point. I don't know.
How did it work? I don't... The answer was never clearly developed, but... There you go.
I don't know. Cool. All right. Well, I guess that's it. You guys got anything else?
No? Thank you. Yep. Thank you, Craig.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Love you.